What we're going to do right here is take you back, way back.
1967.
Summer of Love. 1967 was the year the hippie counterculture movement went mainstream, the Vietnam War was raging, and the hugely popular pirate radio stations moored just off the British coast were effectively closed down by the Marine Offences Act. They'd been broadcasting pop music since the mid-60s, and it helped to launch the careers of household names like Dave Cash, Roger Day, Tony Blackburn, and Johnny Walker. So here we are 50 years on, and their influence is still being felt in the multi-billion pound British music industry and wired across radio stations legally on air today. Broadcaster and radio historian David Lloyd has written about the pirates in his latest book. He joins us now. David, good morning to you.
Good morning, sir.
Why were the pirates so popular at this time then?
I think you touched on it. It was an incredible time for Britain in terms of music and fashion. And yet on the radio, if you turned on the radio in the early 60s, all you had was the Home Service, the Third Programme and the Light Programme. And they all did an excellent job. It's a wonderful comedy on the Light Programme. But in terms of music programming, there was so little on those three BBC channels. And so the pirates really met a need for the music that we know and love. The pirate radio stations came on the air and could broadcast back-to-back great music. And instantly, a teenage young Briton, a permissive Briton, suddenly found that music on their radio sets for the first time. That's why they attracted such a huge audience so quickly.
And why did they have to broadcast from boats moored out in international waters? What was the reason behind that?
Well, of course, the broadcasting scene then was controlled wholly by the British Broadcasting Corporation. There was nobody else apart from the BBC licensed to broadcast, so you couldn't set up a commercial radio station. There was no actual way of doing it. And there were lots of people there thinking that maybe we didn't have enough frequencies, etc., etc. So all sorts of excuses as to why there couldn't be other radio stations. And so the idea was, and it had happened in other countries as well, was that actually if you broadcast from outside territorial waters, then there's nothing to stop you broadcasting. You're free from the regulations of the country because you're outside the jurisdiction of the country concerned. So hence just have a ship, put a transmitter on it, push it out to sea far enough and switch it on. And at that stage in the early 60s, although it was frowned upon, although it was illegitimate, it wasn't illegal to go on board and start broadcasting.
And when they did broadcast, what were the programmes like? Give us a flavour of what people would be listening to back in the 60s.
Well, the great thing is that there were so many different sorts of stations. I mean, everybody thinks of course, the very first one, Radio Caroline, and Radio London was another of the huge radio stations. But also, as time marched on from 1964 onwards, all sorts of other stations, like a light music station called Radio 390, and also more localized radio stations like Radio 270, that are broadcasting to little bits of the country. And these stations were broadcasting not only from ships, but also from wartime forts, and famously off the coast of Kent. You've got quite a few of those. I mean, the ships themselves generally moored off Essex, but just off the coast of Kent, quite a few of the forts as well. And these are, metal structures erected during the war, and literally radio stations on there. As I say, just a range of different formats, but generally the most popular were the ones playing popular music, the hits of the day. They were the popular ones.
Okay, then. So why were the government so against them? What was the problem with them?
Well, there were a number of issues that that concerned a number of people, not just government. There were people who said, hang on a minute, we have got to regulate our broadcast frequencies. And there's a strong case for doing that. I mean, clearly, when you've got a wave band like AM or FM, you've got to work out who's going where. Otherwise, everyone starts to interfere with each other. And that needs to be an internationally agreed system. So there was concern that actually no one was governing the pirates, although they would say, well, of course, we're going to pick a bit of spare spectrum, otherwise it's not going to work very well. There was the issue of copyright as well. The musicians who make the records, they need remunerating for their work, and traditional radio stations do that. The pirates didn't pay for copyright, although some actually volunteered to. And thirdly, it was just, you know, they were out of sight and out of control of anyone in terms of regulating the programmes, who decided what was going to be broadcast. And a few of the stations did recommend that listeners vote in a particular way over time. So all these concerns about frequencies and paying for the music, and in terms of content regulation, it was felt by some in government that this could go on no longer.
Well, all of the history within the pages of David's new book. What's the title of it, David?
Radio Moments is the title. Looking back at the last incredible 50 years. It seems like 50 minutes. 50 years of wonderful radio encoding programmes as good as your own.
Oh, good man. That's it. Thanks. Good to talk to you. Radio historian David Lloyd there. In the next hour, we'll talk more about this. We'll be talking to a pirate radio DJ who was actually there in 1967.